everybody. Welcome to another podcast episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies. I am Neil Rosen, and I am joined, as always, by Bill Bregoli.
That's right. I'm here.
Yeah, you're here. You are indeed. And not remotely this week, if you listen to last week's podcast.
Well, but I can be remote if I want to be.
You can. Is Bill McCuddy.
Hey, that's me.
Well, there you go. So, you know, it's the dog days of summer. It's the end of August. Not a lot of stuff's really opening up, I have to tell you. So as we...
There's a movie none of us have seen called Ready or Not. They didn't screen it that much, but they have screened it. They're not hiding it from people. It got some decent buzz out from people like our friends at Collider who like this kind of horror thing. It's a bunch of people in alone in a house playing hide and seek and... But the deadly kind. They're armed. They're packing.
A new bride is told that she has to, in order to be part of the family, she has to go through this initiation.
Right, which starts out seeming to be completely innocent, and then people start pulling bows and arrows out and hatchets and guns and knives.
Yeah.
And it's the game Clue gone very, very wrong. But we were not. In terms of Ready or Not, we were not. So we don't. We have to pass on talking about that one.
But there are a bunch of movies, smaller movies,
including some hidden gems.
Yes, we have some hidden gems. So let's start out with a movie that's opening up called Brittany Runs a Marathon. And it stars Jillian Bell, who she's really a supporting player in lots of movies. But now she is starring in this movie as a woman who she's a good time party girl who's very overweight and goes to a doctor to get a prescription for Adderall for recreational use. And the doctor goes, I'm not going to give you that prescription, but I have
to. How many hours of sleep do you get a night? You should get between 7 and 8. Oh, I get way more than that. I mean, it's very funny.
Well, she the doctor tells her that she has to lose weight, that she's in really bad shape. And she decides to take up running. And her goal is to run a marathon. And there's no real suspense here since the title says Brittany Runs a Marathon. I think you know that she's going to...
Well, there's a couple stumbles and there's a couple of places that are not, oh my God, six
I would have called
twists,
it
but...
Brittany Wants to Run a Marathon. But all right, that's a quibble. But in the beginning of the movie, there's a lot of humor there. And then 15, 20 minutes in, once she gets this diagnosis that she needs to lose weight because she's extremely unhealthy, the movie shifts into a more serious tone. And, you know, you're watching an hour and 10 minutes of her basically training in running. And I was a little kind of – I think the movie's okay, but I was a little bored with that. She has a relationship. She gets a job I won't really call it dog sitting, dog walking. And there's a night guy and a day guy. She's the night guy and a day woman.
Night walker?
She's a night walker. Well, actually, she's the day walker.
She's the day walker. Okay. And the guy that's the night walker of the dog has decided, since the people are away for a couple of months, he's decided to move into the apartment.
That's a funny idea. And he gets her sort of...
So she goes, I'm going to report you. And he goes, well, you could do that. But if you did that, then... you know, we'd probably both lose our jobs, and then we'd have nothing. So she puts up with it, and then they both move into the apartment. And they
now,
both
the,
live the, in
where
months.
We disagree on this is that I think the when
well,
it
I
becomes
like
more serious, yeah, he's funny. I couldn't tell you his last name, his name to save my life. He's of Indian descent.
His name is Utkarsh Ambutkar.
Yeah.
That is his
if
name.
If you look at the spelling of this, it looks like the Scramble name when you go to the movie
the
and you like...
Oh, how about the,
you
the
jumble
in,
yeah,
the
jumble
newspaper?
Name.
Yeah, okay.
So, pardon us if that's offensive to anyone,
it's
a very strange-looking name and it's hard to... But he's
for
funny.
American
he's
audience.
Good. And what I disagree with you on is that when it takes the more serious turn, she's the one that takes the more serious turn. She's the wisecracking one in the beginning and she becomes more somber. But she's still surrounded by some very funny people. And there are a lot of good scenes in it. She's not sure she wants to have sex with again. She hasn't had it in a while. She goes on some dates. And I think that the honesty of this thing that you're not sort of seeing is I called it kind of Amy Schumer light. And what I mean by that is that...
On the Talking Pictures with Neil Rosen television show, which we recorded today, which will air next week on CUNY.
It's
more
called Talking Pictures with Neil Rosen, patent pending. That it's... It's basically it's a dramedy at that point, but I think the pathos of someone who is overweight and been fat shamed It was lost on you, is all I can
no,
say.
No, I think that...
Because I think it's very deftly handled.
No, I understand that in the beginning of the movie, she is utilizing humor as her, you know, self-deprecating. She's like the, I'm the one that's going to make the jokes.
But she's a crying on the inside clown.
Yes.
And you don't like the crying on the inside
part.
No.
I think that I have no problem with her, you know, trying to get into shape and her trials and tribulations with that. I just think that there were a lot of scenes of her running, basically. Training, running, training.
Well, she has talking, other people.
Talking to those people that she's running with. I mean, there's a subplot with another woman who she goes running with that she meets who has other problems.
Going through a divorce and a difficult child custody thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just didn't gravitate to it. I mean, I didn't really... I mean, I think her performance was good. I think that the guy whose name that we can't pronounce, I think his performance was
he's
good.
He's very funny.
Call him CAPTCHA guy. He's like the little CAPTCHA things when you're on your internet.
Okay. Yes. He's a human emoji, let's call him.
But he's very talented and he's very funny.
Well, I recommend
it. I don't know.
It's on Amazon, is that correct?
I don't say it's bad. I'm saying it's not great. I'm saying that, as discussed on the show today, that it was okay. One of our panelists, Justine Browning, who's on the show today with Bill McCuddy and Lisa Rossman, I was in the screening with her, and she was with a friend at the end of the movie. They were both crying. It did not hit me that way.
Last night. I wasn't crying, but
right.
I
didn't get choked up or anything. I mean, and I'm pretty easy in this kind of thing. I mean, I'll watch It's a Wonderful Life for the 50th time, and I'll still get, you know, choked up when to the richest man in town, George Bailey, and I'll still...
Well, you're a huge pussy, and we know that.
And I'll watch the end of Toy Story 3 when the toys, or Little Mermaid, when Ariel get the father
right.
gives her up and gives her... And I get choked up on this shit. So
are we
going to
go
like
through
I'm
every
callous,
movie that
but this
makes
did
you
not
cry?
Hit, this did not hit me emotionally like that. Look, I'm not saying it's a terrible movie. I'm
I know you're not.
I'm saying it's average.
Well, I'm saying it's better than that. Mm-hmm. Bill, you didn't see it.
It sounds like we got Neil on a good day.
we gonna see. You gonna come to that, or are you gonna go see it?
All right,
on Amazon?
Bill, we'll play the game. So Bill hasn't seen. We're gonna talk about a bunch of movies this week.
Okay,
Bill
settle
hasn't
down.
Seen.
Settle
Actually,
down.
I've met Julianne Bell. She's very nice, so I might see it just because of that.
Okay.
I'll tell you one thing. I thought in the beginning of the movie she is like 40-50 pounds overweight, and I thought it was just prosthetics. But on the television show today, from what I'm to understand, does she gain the weight and lose the weight for the
movie?
I
think that she did, and I think that this is very autobiographical, and I think that I don't...
Well, I think
the
it's
movie,
autobiographical by the
movie
writer director.
The movie spans like 15 or 16 months, and I don't think it was shot over 15 or 16 months.
Well, that's the thing.
Months,
it's a low-budget movie, and I really don't think, okay, you're at X
but
amount
again,
of weight
to give
now.
It
let,
a nice...
let's wait another 3 weeks till you lose more weight and shoot again. I mean, that's a very hard way to do a movie.
Well, on the other hand, if it's you only have 20 shooting days and you spread them out over a year, maybe it's easier. That's
well,
how
availability.
Ed, that's how Ed Burns made his first movie. He shot it took like 2.5 years, but he shot on
the
weekends
Brothers
when
McMullen?
He had. Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Okay. Well.
Okay,
yeah.
I like it. You don't.
All right. Well.
You hate overweight women. You, we,
no,
we've known that for day one.
No, that's quite the opposite of that.
Okay, okay. We don't really need to know any of this.
No.
All right.
What's the next thing?
All right, let's talk about a documentary.
On the Dog Days of Summer edition.
That I also don't like, but we'll talk about that. It's a documentary about the, which Bill Bregoli, since he played Tevye once upon a time.
You don't like overweight Jews? Is that your problem?
You know, it's called Fiddler. It's a documentary on Fiddler on the Roof. Fiddler,
A Miracle of Miracles.
Yeah, it did.
Bill took the lead on it, which means he told everybody about it on the TV show.
Well, what I think is amazing is that they literally go through everyone who's ever played Tevye or been in it, and you're not in the movie.
I don't understand either.
This
and
is
how
very
many
upsetting.
People
they
are
go
part
to Japan.
Italian,
they go to. They go all over the world. There's a Mars production that gets about 10 minutes in the
film. Did they time the release just after the producer died?
Well, Hal Prince is one of the producers of the original Broadway show in the early 1960s, I think 63. And they dedicate, the film opens with dedicated to our pal Hal Prince, who found Jerome Robbins and talked him into directing it. And this was a show that started in Detroit. And bombed there. Had an extra song in it that when you listen to in the movie, sounds kind of cool, but didn't make the grade. And they literally revamped the show. Austin Pendleton was in the original, and he's in the doc a lot, and he says, I thought we'd be dead in six weeks. So I guess he was Broadway.
They never take as he was Muddle the Tailor. I'm just guessing.
I don't know. They show him in the original production.
Is Topol in fact, in it?
They have tons of Topol. Yeah, well, Norman Jewison is in the film, and he says
they show Topol's in the movie.
They
like
asked me to,
they,
and there was big pressure for those who didn't see the original on Broadway to put Zero Mostel, the guy, and Josh Mostel, someone we know from going to dinners and stuff, lives in New York, is in the film. A lot of famous people are in the film who have been, quote unquote, touched by this particular play and or movie. And as I said on the show, it may be more than you ever wanted to know about Fiddler on the Roof, but it is scrupulous. And you think it doesn't have enough of. There's a current production in New York right now that Joel Grey produced.
Yeah, production of Fiddler on the Roof.
Yeah,
that is
it's all Yiddish.
That's in Yiddish with English.
On my
subtitles.
Way to the Playboy Club for. Bill's little soiree up there. I passed it. It's on 42nd Street.
Yeah, it's doing very,
so
very well off Broadway.
How do the subtitles work? I mean,
I have no idea. Is it like the opera where they somehow
project
them onto the at some place in the screen?
Yeah. I don't know.
In the theater. Anyway, I found this very entertaining. Neil, again, underwhelmed.
Okay, so here's what I found about 15 minutes of this documentary to be interesting. And these are the moments that I found interesting in the documentary.
Okay. He has a list.
What's
that? Anything written down you
the
want to share
that
with us?
It bombed in Detroit, which Bill brought up a few minutes ago, and that they had to...
And what a prick Jerome Robbins is, as you said
in
the Jerry
and
Robbins.
They had to rewrite the whole thing, or a good portion of it. And yeah, Jerome Robbins, who was the choreographer on the show, was this hated, mean guy who berated everybody...
Taskmaster
made people cry. He said, "You, there's nothing. You shouldn't even be on this stage." I mean,
but everybody, Stephen Sondheim, everyone that ever worked with him,
hated the guy, but I'd work again with him in 2 seconds because he was such a genius that as much as everybody couldn't stand the guy, they recognized how brilliant of a choreographer was and what his ideas were so innovative that they'd work. I found that interesting,
but to the point where at the opening where they get lousy reviews in Detroit, the cast is at a bar. And I think Austin walks up to Jerome and says, "What are you going to do?" And he goes, 10 changes every day until we get to Broadway. And so they did 10 things differently every day. He said he wasn't kidding. They cut things, they added, they changed some of the choreography, and it worked.
Well, I found it to kind of, other than those 15 minutes, I found it to be kind of all over the place. Like the Yiddish production you just mentioned, there's a high school production that they show you. Then they get
in all black cast.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, but you know.
I mean, those are all interesting things, Neil.
I don't know. I thought it was too long. I mean, I've seen many productions of Fiddler on the Roof over the years. I think you'd be better suited to go watch a production or maybe this Yiddish production of Fiddler on the Roof. I think I think a half an hour to give me the groundwork of the whole thing was enough. This is like an hour and a half, and I got bored with the thing.
As I said on the show, it was all for you, all sunset and no sunrise. No,
most of the show, they were analyzing each song in the show. Well, sunrise, sunset, blah, blah, blah. You know, do you love me?
I found all of that fascinating. You know, how they bench test everything that happens and how.
Does he really love her? Well, she's it was a complete analytical look, a breakdown of each particular song. And I don't know. I think a half an hour would have suited me fine. You know what I mean? I think in an hour.
It was originally called Tevye. And then somebody said. What about Fiddler on the Roof? Because they had a fiddler on a roof, and they go, "Okay, that sounds better." Lots of little backstories like that that I found more interesting than you did. That's all.
All right, so I wasn't thrilled with it. You know what can
what,
I say?
Oh, what do you like?
Anything? Oh, what do you like, Gilbert? Oh, who do you like, Gilbert? It's a Gilbert Gottfried line. So here's another movie. I'm telling you, it's the end of August. We're hitting we're scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Well, you. I've liked both of the two things we just talked about.
Okay, so here's another movie that you don't like.
It's called
Loose.
Yeah. Now this movie, did you see this one, Bill?
No, I'll tell you what this is about. So it's a drama starring Kelvin Harrison Jr. as Loose. And Loose is at 7 years old, he was adopted by a white family played by a woke liberal white couple played by Naomi Watts and
Tim Roth,
and Tim Roth,
who we haven't seen in a bunch of things.
Right. And they adopt him from this war-torn African country and bring him here and give him every opportunity that you could possibly
to be white
of.
And middle class.
Well, they kind of ignore his African background, and you know, but he's taken advantage of these opportunities. He's on track to be school valedictorian in his high school. He's the model student. He's
you've left the key player out of here. I'll let you get to
I'm
it.
I'm getting to that.
Okay, all right.
And everybody loves this guy. He's like he's like not only because of his the background that he came from, you know, this impoverished country with all this, you know, tumult, to use a Yiddish word, since we were talking about Fiddler on the Roof a few minutes ago. But but Octavia
he has black friends and white friends.
Right. But Octavia Spencer, who's his history teacher, says, you know, something's not right here. Because, first of all, he writes a term paper advocating violence and murder in certain situations. Then she inspects his locker and she finds fireworks, which he thinks are going to be used as explosives. So is this – so Octavia Spencer –
which is kind of ridiculous.
It's kind of like –
I kept thinking.
Is this guy the model student, or is he like a radical terrorist in waiting? Right. And the
sleeper
high school,
cell.
The high school, what's that?
A sleeper cell.
Yeah, is you know, and the audience never knows the whole movie, whether
not even when the credits roll.
Exactly, you just never know. I mean, the parents are backing him 100% and don't buy any of this stuff that Octavia.
No, not both of them. Not initially.
Well, Tim Roth the high thinks principal's
he's
on.
Tim Roth thinks he's lying. The dad.
But eventually he comes on board with the you know, and. The high school principal is totally in the corner of the kid.
Right. Well, he loves him.
But there's, you know,
Octavia Spencer has done this before.
But she's painted to be nuts in the movie. And the problem is
fresh off her performance as Ma.
Aha.
And you know, I don't think the movie.
Another movie that went
although
nowhere.
The movie, I like the movie. I think it's a grown-up movie. And I think the cast was outstanding, and it doesn't offer up easy answers. It gives you a lot of food for thought, and it's a discussion movie where you discuss afterwards. But I will say
your
that...
Your food for thought is an empty plate to me.
But I will tell you that on the negative side of this movie, and we talked about this on the TV show today, to take the leaps that this Octavia Spencer character, not only in what she... the leaps that she's taking, but in the way that nobody's taking her seriously, and she's the teacher with the credibility. There's a subplot with... she has a sister who's, like, completely imbalanced,
right.
You know? I mean, there's a lot of holes in this movie.
People have been comparing it to Crash in the sense that there are a lot of storylines and it deals with race, and a lot of people are taking the bait on this film and saying it's very topical and timely. To me, it just has a bunch of red herrings that never pay off. Octavia has acted like policewoman on another kid and found something in his locker. Why she's allowed to go into lockers anymore after that first incident is never completely explained. They're setting her up to bring her down, you think, and then they don't quite do all of that. Some racial epithets or a racial epithet is written on her house. It's never really clear.
Well, I said there's a lot of plot holes in this thing. I mean, I still say, you know, I watched it with my wife and we started talking about this thing for quite a bit, you know, after the
movie.
Was
she explaining it to you?
Well, she explains everything to me. But
we should have her here.
Yeah. But, you know, the problem is yeah, I mean, look, I think I think the good outweighs the bad in the movie. I agree it's a flawed movie and there's a lot of plot holes, but I think that it raises a lot of questions and it raises discussion.
But it never answers some of the core questions.
No, you never get an answer.
Whether or not Octavia Spencer is good or bad and whether or not this kid is good or bad.
Why would Octavia Spencer be bad? I mean, you know, like what would her agenda be to be bad? I mean,
well,
you understand
she's
the kid
making, now a pattern of trying to find these quote-unquote bad kids. So she is a little nutty in that regard. And... but is she? And is she railroaded? I never got a sense of it. This is a movie at the end that you go, what the fuck did I just watch?
Well, here's the thing, okay? At the end of the movie, it's ambiguous. You never find out if the kid is the radical terrorist or if the kid is a...
I would say in the last 10 seconds, you're supposed to believe one or the other, and I won't say if you're going to watch it.
Yeah, I agree with that. When he's running down the street, yes, I agree with that. But, you know, there are many movies from the 60s and the 70s where the endings were very ambiguous, and I kind of, where you just kind of say to yourself...
Well, those were better movies.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie hasn't made 10 cents. You know, for a hot button, a hot button liberal cool movie that's supposed to be topical and timely, I think it's made like $500,000. I apologize if it's made more. I don't know, and I'm not going to stop the podcast right now to look. But it's not. It's in theaters and it's out. It's gone. I wanted to see it. I got a link, but I wanted to see it like in a theater, and it was playing at 3:30 today, any day this week, at one theater in the city. So it's not hauling in tons of dough.
No.
Which is too bad, because Naomi Watts really is pretty good. Tim Roth, who we have, you know, this is a guy from Reservoir Dogs.
The kid is great. The Kelvin Harrison is great.
Yeah, I think he's good, too.
And Octavia's always good, you know what I mean? I think so. I mean, you might not like how the character was written, but she gives a good performance. Then the unstable sister, my God. I mean, that was...
a lot of baggage here.
Yeah, all right. So, Bill Brigoli, would you see this movie?
No.
Okay, all right. So, anyway, there's another documentary that's out called Be Natural. And with a long Be Natural, the something, something, something of something, something, something.
So Google it is what we're saying.
No, I'm going to tell you.
I'll tell you the exact
title.
Doesn't matter what her name is. You'll tell us in a second.
No, I'm telling you.
There was a woman in history in France who, in the late 1800s.
Okay, can I just Be Natural, the untold story of Alice Guy Blaché.
Okay. I saw this.
You saw
did?
This?
Yes, I did.
Well, that's just great. Did you really? When did you see this?
Months ago.
Yeah,
great.
It's been around.
It was like, hey, Bill, would you be interested?
Hey, Bill, would you like to tell everybody about the movie, or was it too long ago to...
No, I can tell you about it. Yeah, it's about Alice Guy Blaché. Now, back in France, when the motion picture business was just getting started, she was an assistant to somebody very famous, but it's been too many months. And he begrudgingly let her help out on productions. Eventually, she took over.
She went for a job as an assistant.
Yeah.
And she... since you saw it so many times, we'll do a joint thing here.
She saw a presentation of motion picture.
Right.
And she was so taken with it that she had some ideas. And
nobody gave a shit, because it wasn't like movies in the 40s where it was a multi-million-dollar business. I mean, it was like... We're coming out of the Nickelodeon era when people are dropping a nickel in the thing and just cranking the thing. Like, fine, you want to do some of these. Fine, nobody cared.
Yeah,
you know, it was like when YouTube first came out. I'm going to put a YouTube.
But
video
she had
on
real plots, real stories.
She created narrative movies. There were no narrative movies before.
And just the idea that this woman was never heard of or sort of swept under the rug. It's as though Mrs. Alexander Graham Bell invented the phone, and we are just finding out today.
Right.
Because
plus, then she
was
to America,
lost in history.
Went to America, got married. Her husband wouldn't give her any credit for what he did. He was also a filmmaker. Went out west. They got divorced. And she did get lost. And then the film has a device of showing some of her work to modern-day filmmakers, most of whom admit they had no idea who she was
either.
Yeah,
that's the astounding thing about
that. Well, that's what's weird. In the beginning of the movie, they have this whole montage of like Peter Farrelly from the Farrelly Brothers, you know, Julie Delpy from the Before Sunrise,
right.
Peter Bogdanovich.
A French filmmaker, and they all say...
I don't know who she is. And then later on in the movie, they wax poetic about how wonderful she was. So if you don't know who she is, all of a sudden you have all this knowledge about who she was. Jodie Foster does the narration on this particular movie. Her French accent kind of bothered me. She's
really good.
Yeah, I know, but she's like, it's so overly like...
She pronounced a lot of names that you and me could never
fucking get
through.
Yeah, she's the only one. In fact, I actually interviewed...
I interviewed the filmmaker, and she
told me Jodie was the only one who could get her mouth around that stuff.
Well,
so it worked for me. Anyway.
I think it's great that this woman. I mean, if you study, and I mean, I took lots of film courses. You know, I never heard of this woman, and she was eradicated off of the textbooks. This woman is finally going to get her due, and I think that that's great. You know, that finally, like, let's correct history. But I think it's kind of a travesty because of the fact that she was a woman, as you said, with this Alexander Graham Bell analogy. That she wasn't recognized,
right.
And simply because she was a woman, and apparently all of these techniques, some of them are still being used today.
She's Tucker. She's basically Tucker.
Tucker, guy who invented the car, no one knew anything.
Yeah, she got bulldozed over.
Well, I think that...
it's an interesting film.
Yeah, I mean...
Funny enough, Lisa Rossman, who is the staunch feminist of our television program, I'm sorry, Neil's television program,
oh, God.
is the... no, I'm just going by the title. was really bored by the documentary and really felt like this was a real travesty, that this woman was so great and she got such a bad movie. I didn't think the movie was bad. I was fascinated by it.
No, I think it was very interesting.
Done with the less of the modern day film actor type people.
Yeah, I guess they thought that would make it more interesting.
Lisa's complaint was, they spent like 10 minutes for her trying to track down an old recording of an interview,
and then they had to bake the tape.
Distant relatives,
which, by the way,
and stuff
I
like
have baked tapes in my time.
Really?
You do have to do that, yeah.
Well, I think that this is something that documentary filmmakers are trying to do. They're trying to have a mystery that gets solved somewhere in it. Here's another name I'm going to get wrong. Dag Hammarskjöld?
Yeah, Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza is in Manhattan.
Yeah, so that's that movie is just been released, and that's supposedly a big mystery. And these I think Swedish filmmakers go out in the middle of nowhere and literally try and dig up the clues that answer whether he was shot down or not in this plane in 1962. And there's an answer at the end. I think, you know, ever since Errol Morris's The Thin Blue Line, documentary filmmakers feel like if they can expose some uncovered truth, like basically take a cold case and find some kind of an answer for it, then that makes a good movie. And I'm not sure that
there were a couple of
works in this one. I didn't need it.
Yeah.
And
there were a couple of cool things, like they go to locations and they show you this. They take a modern day location and then part of the frame, they insert the 1905 or whatever it is, black and white movie into the location. I mean, there was a couple of kind of cool things.
New Jersey was quite the place, I guess.
Apparently, I learned that New Jersey was until...
Well, that you didn't know? It was really before Hollywood.
Yeah, but I didn't realize that every motion picture studio had just like the Paramount lot and, you know...
Those mansions across the river in Englewood and Fort Lee were all like where huge movie stars and big...
And they were all the movie studios. And what did they tell you they left? Because there was a reason they left. They told you in the movie. They left and went. It wasn't for the weather. Once they got there, they were happy with the weather. But
right.
It was something.
It wasn't some money issue that they.
It's always a money issue, Bill. It's always a money issue.
Well, I don't remember.
What was it specifically?
But it wasn't that important to me.
No. I don't remember.
There was a reason.
See the movie and then tweet us, please.
There was a reason that they were forced out of Jersey. There was not a conducive atmosphere. To
politics?
I don't know.
I honestly don't remember.
I don't know.
Should we take all this out of the podcast?
No.
See, that's what we do here. It's warts and all. What we don't know, we make up. No, we admit what we don't know.
So
all right, what else is coming out? Or what else did we watch?
Well, you know, there's...
Here in the dog days of summer, where Neil Rosen likes nothing.
Before we do, I'll just say one last thing on this Be Natural
thing.
Oh,
please do, because it wasn't long enough, the conversation.
If you're a film student or a film buff, I think you'll find it fascinating. I don't know if you would find this at an hour and 40 minutes.
Pretty sure you said that earlier, but I'm glad you repeated it because it was worth repeating.
You know me, I'm always redundant. And I don't listen to you. So, as you know, before you beat me to the punch on, like, you don't listen.
Watch the show today. I was really funny. You'll see. This is what he learns every time he edits the show. He calls me and goes, you were really funny. I didn't see it the first time. All right.
I'll have to watch someday.
Yeah,
you maybe
will.
Watch the show. That would be nice.
Bump our viewership to 3.
You know, and we're on PBS now, on All Arts, PBS All Arts, as well as CUNY TV.
Oh.
You know,
doesn't mean if I watch you, I get a
tote
bag. The
movie came out with a title today.
So he's not listening.
It's called No Time to Die.
That's the new James Bond movie.
Yeah, they came out with the title today.
Does anybody remember, because we were bitching and moaning about it like 6 weeks ago when they came up with some weird name?
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be called No Time
to
Die.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
Now, many... Bill McCuddy is one of the...
This will be 25, right? This is Bond 25.
Yeah,
I don't know any Bond fan. I mean, personally, as big of a Bond fan as you are, how many Bond titles have the word die in it?
Bill McCuddy.
Let's see.
Well, let's do it.
Okay, Live and Let Die.
Die Another Day.
Tomorrow Never Dies. I win.
I think that's it.
Dye my shirt, the color's wrong.
Yeah, dye my hair, which is what they're having to do with some of these aging Bonds. And we have a female 007, or is that the one after this one?
No.
I don't know.
Barbara Broccoli, who inherited the franchise from Albert R. Broccoli, Cubby Broccoli, said there will never be a female James Bond, but I think this movie opens, there is a female James Bond for like 20
There's
minutes or
There's not a female James Bond.
Female 007.
There's a female 007.
Right, and that something happens, and then... Blah, 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 blah. But yes, there will. According to Barbara Broccoli, who owns the franchise, she said she will never make a movie where 007 James Bond is the Beyonce.
She's lovely, but she's a little prickly. And you've interviewed her too. You have, I'm sure.
I never interviewed her. But my wife knows.
Somebody, Harry Saltzman's daughter goes, because I saw her in the hall before an interview, this a couple of movies ago, and I did my Sean Connery for her. And then when we get into the room, Saltzman's daughter goes to Barbara, "Have you heard Bill's Sean Connery impression?" She goes, "Yes, and I'm sure he's going to do it again." And then she got really mad. Remember when Heineken put some money into like two bonds ago, and like it was a big deal because Bond was going to order a beer instead of a martini.
Shaking
it was
us.
Like a big deal because they gave him like $100 million. The films have become all about product placement, which is fine. That's how they finance them. But I asked her if he orders when he goes up to the bar, if he asks for a Heineken. And she goes, "No, Bill, he asks for a beer." And he gets a Heineken.
So like, let me ask you, Bill. Thank you. Bill McCuddy, as the big 007 fan that you are, and you told me a whole story about how you and your father used to go to see the films together when you were a kid and all that stuff. As we all know, the Bond franchise has gone through ups and downs, you know, and I think revitalized with Daniel Craig, certainly with Casino Royale. Do you still get excited to watch these things? I mean, I'm not saying when you were 9 years old and you saw them on that level, but do you, or are you like played
I
out?
I have to go.
Are you played
it's
out?
Appointment
do you,
television.
Do you have it?
No,
have
I
you
mean,
had it already?
I know I'll be disappointed. But I go anyway.
When's the last time you weren't disappointed with a Bond film? Was it Casino Royale?
Yeah, the one with Woody Allen and David Niven.
Yes. And Peter Sellers. Wasn't it Peter Sellers? No, David Niven.
I didn't love Casino Royale. I've come to like Daniel Craig, but I wasn't, I've always been a Connery guy and probably always will be. I can go back and watch those over and over again. I'm flipping around, I stop on them. So I would say last time, I mean, I always go expecting something great the way I did with Woody Allen movies over the years. I just had to be there the first day they opened.
What gets you that's great? Is it the gadgets? Is it the scenery? Is it
girls? I think
it's the Bond persona? I mean, what is it that really...
I think for me, as a man in his early 60s, so grew up during that whole time.
You're in your
time,
early 60s?
Yes, I'm much younger than you are. I think it was the first pure escapist movies that I saw as a kid, just hands down.
So what will when you see a movie, what excites you?
I like when they're clever, but I think the Bond franchise has been outdone by Ethan Hunt. I think Tom Cruise is a better Mission Impossible.
How about
and
the
I think
stuff?
The Jason Bourne stuff is better.
Well, what about
although that's gotten really tired in four movies. So
what about the which could never have happened without that series. What about 24? Remember 24?
Sure, I was a huge 24.
Me too.
Fan.
And I mean, I was
addictive.
Me too.
That was based on the old serials, the cliffhangers.
I think that the 007 movies, you know, had something to do with that. The way, you know, just the way Sean Connery could just blow through anything and bust it. You know, he's got
never worried about charging his battery, never worried about...
Yeah,
I think the gimmick of 24 hours in a row is pretty original also.
Yeah, but,
I mean,
it, was, but it was ridiculous. I love the show.
Fine, but...
My wife and I would watch this and go, wait a minute. 40 minutes ago, he was in Mexico, and now they're in the...
No, I know.
And now they're in L.A., and they killed two people. Come on, you know? But I love the show. It was addicting as hell. It's like the... Perils of Pauline,
sure.
Yeah, like you said, movie serials where it's like you get to the end and you go like, I can't stop watching.
Right, I'm mentioning the things I grew up with Bond, and you're mentioning the things you grew up with the Perils of Pauline, and the talkies came in.
No, there were no movies when I grew up. Yeah. We read books and radio.
We drew pictures on walls in the cave.
Right, I heard about this thing called radio that was coming out.
We made shadow puppets,
that's right. That's right. We did.
Oh, look at the time. Well, what are we talking about next week? What's opening?
There's nothing opening next week. There's a thing called Don't Let Go, which is a horror movie.
Hey, let's spend 30 seconds going. Oh, I'm sorry. I just did a kneel to you. What did you just say?
There's a movie called Don't Let Go with David Oyelowo.
Oh.
Yes.
It's listed as a horror suspense kind of movie.
And and the big surprise last weekend was Good Boys.
Good Boys.
It was really
way,
good.
20-some odd million dollars.
Way more than
way
they thought it was going to.
More than projected.
Yeah.
And Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg producing these
that
guys.
That could be, and I'll just go on the record, a much bigger hit than Booksmart, which I predicted was going to be a $100 million movie.
That
and
just
wasn't.
Died on a vine, man. No, it just came and went.
I think it made 35 or 40 million bucks. It did okay, but it didn't do what I thought.
It's coming out on DVD next
week. You've been so wrong with your predictions. You thought Lion King was going to be the biggest grossing.
I don't care as long as I like them. If I'm wrong on this, at least if it's a movie I like.
You're upset about Booksmart not making more money, but you don't care about Lion King because you didn't like the movie. If I'm getting, I didn't love Lion King.
Like Jungle Book better.
I like Jungle Book better. Prediction. Too. What about you? Jungle Book or Lion King, Bill Bergoli?
You mean the
live action remakes?
Yes. Yeah. Jungle Book.
Yeah, thanks.
Jungle Book, yeah. Jungle
he always
Book.
Agrees with me. We don't really need you. Where's your wife? If she's really the smart one, why isn't she doing this fucking podcast?
Yeah, why?
Hey, we listen to the bad movies so you don't have to.
Yeah, and thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. I think next week we will maybe look back at the summer. Hits
Ooh.
And misses. And then after that, we'll do a fall preview. And then after that, we have our annual film festival.
Tell us about that.
Road trip.
I'm kidding. All right. Thanks for listening.
And thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. You can reach Bill McCuddy at Bill McCuddy. You can reach Bill Bergoli
on Instagram.
You can reach me at Neil Rosen Apples on Twitter. And thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. We'll sit around talking movies again with you next week.